Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. It's Politics Monday, 2 days after former Vice President Joe Biden's impressive victory in the South Carolina primary.
Just days ago, the press and the pundits had declared this candidacy dead. Now, thanks to all of you, the heart of the Democratic Party, we just won, and we've won big because of you. And we are very much alive.
Biden took every county in South Carolina and nearly 60% of the vote. He had well more than tripled the number of votes brought in by Bernie Sanders, which has changed the political landscape for the Democrats. It is now a two-person race between Joe Biden and the man who has been leading the race up till now, Mr. Sanders.
I believe very strongly that the people of this country on Super Tuesday and after are going to support our campaign because we are more than a campaign. We are a movement.
Well, Super Tuesday is tomorrow. North Carolina, which has the third most delegates at stake, votes with 13 other states, including California with the highest number of delegates and Texas with the second highest. Many of the people in those states have already participated in early voting. They voted before Joe Biden found his footing. Are there enough people among those who will vote tomorrow who will also be impressed by Biden's South Carolina victory to push him to the top of the field going forward? Or was this a one-off, never to be repeated? We're going to talk at length about the South Carolina primary and what's ahead for tomorrow with three political experts. But first, let's hear from the Biden campaign and a man who predicted Joe Biden's win on Saturday and who believes he will have a solid showing tomorrow. South Carolina State Senator Dick Harputlian, welcome to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Just so you know, Tom Steyer was scheduled to be our leadoff guest this morning, but he ended his campaign on Saturday night. Of course, Pete Buttigieg ended his last night. Neither of them saw a path forward. What role do you think Joe Biden's victory played in all of that?
Well, with the amount of money and time that Tom Steyer spent here, tens of millions of dollars, outspent everybody else in the field by 10 to 1, spent time here. He obviously had to get some momentum here and didn't get it. He said a week ago that South Carolina was do or die, so I guess it was die.
You've been around Democratic politics for a long time, and suddenly this has gone from a two-person race that appeared to be Bernie and Pete to a two-person race that is Bernie and Joe. How did that happen? Why is it now a two-person race before we even have the 14 states on Super Tuesday? How do we know this?
Well, a couple of reasons. The first is that, you know, Joe Biden has been courting Democratic primary voters for 30 years as vice president to Barack Obama. He traveled the country on his behalf to many of these states. He's got a resonance in these states, a residual resonance with mainstream Democrats. Now, let me point out, for instance, what happened here and how that affects what happens elsewhere. Joe Biden pointed out at the debate last week that Bernie Sanders had voted against the Brady Bill five times. And he also killed a bill which would allow gun manufacturers to be sued. We were within 200 yards of Mother Emanuel Church at the time, and I could hear a deep sort of inhale when folks heard that. That had never been pointed out before. That same message spread throughout the South, especially Alabama, Mississippi, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee. It resonates very much with folks that for whom gun restrictions are very, very important. As Joe Biden has sort of explained who he is and where he's from and his background and personal background, it resonates. He's one of us. He's a sort of a normal middle class guy who happens to be running for president of the United States. Now, for Steyer and Buttigieg, they both had an angle. I think Pete Buttigieg is one of the brightest, most articulate young Democrats I've seen in a generation. I just think it's not his time. It's not his year. Tom Steyer needs to go back to doing whatever he was doing, because what he did here was the amount of money he spent was caustic, and didn't get him a single delegate. So I think what's going to happen tomorrow is you're going to see a number of folks after Joe has now scored big in South Carolina, which is much the first sort of diverse state. You're going to see, I think we're going to get a big surprise tomorrow night, or at least the pundits, I don't know whether that's y'all or not, are going to get a big surprise tomorrow night. Mm.
Well, one thing we're learning about this campaign, this particular one, is that money doesn't seem to matter anymore because you've got two billionaires in this race. Tom Steyer spent $17 million in television advertising in South Carolina alone and then withdrew from the race because he did so badly. And you've got Mike Bloomberg, who's willing to spend as much as it takes to elect somebody other than Donald Trump. He'd like it to be him, but he has promised to go forward with whoever the nominee is, except it seems that Bernie doesn't want his money, which is odd. but the Biden campaign has been characterized as being cash strapped. Will that change after his victory over the weekend?
Well, I think it's already changed. I've heard estimates that $10 million have come in the last 72 hours, and I know the Super PAC has taken in $3 or $4 or $5 million is what I've heard. So no, I mean, but let me say this. I think Mike Bloomberg's going to find out that a former Republican mayor of New York is not going to have that kind of resonance that Joe Biden has. So I think after Super Tuesday, he should get out and put his financial resources with Joe Biden. And of course, he's free to run whatever ads he wants to run in swing states, describing Donald Trump's failure to lead. We don't need to go into the litany about Donald Trump, but. If Mike Bloomberg wants to change the course of history, he'll get out of this this primary process on Wednesday and commit to help Joe Biden every way he can. Let me say this, but
sure.
Make this clear, that Bernie Sanders, I don't care what anybody says, I've actually campaigned over the years in places like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan. He will not win those states in the fall, and this country is not ready to elect a socialist. And that's the way he described himself, and especially in these times.
Am I wrong that you supported him in 2016, Bernie Sanders?
You're not wrong, because this was an effort. I thought Hillary Clinton, I said in 2014 to the New York Times, she couldn't beat anybody. Bernie, at that point, was the only alternative. And I supported him in the South Carolina primary. And he failed miserably, and that was a lesson to me that whatever he's selling, people ain't buying.
Yeah, you told John Heilman on the circus over the weekend on Showtime that Bernie, I don't know whether you were kidding or not, but that Bernie is an unpleasant man to be around, and that he doesn't treat his staff members well. Is that true?
That was my experience.
Okay.
He was very curt, very surly, very prickly. And no warmth. Look, I've been around Barack Obama. I worked for him hard in 07 and 08 before he was a serious contender. I was around Bill Clinton early on in his campaign, went door-to-door with him in New Hampshire in 92. I've been around folks. I've even been around George W. Bush in a sort of not as close as I would with the others. But they're all, most of them are, considerate of the people around them, and they're try to be kind, in tense times everybody's going to snap. But Bernie's sort of default mood is curmudgeon, he's also, in my opinion, based on what he's saying right now, he's the opposite side of the same coin of Donald Trump. Donald Trump rallied his base by promising a wall that Mexico would pay for. He knew that wasn't going to happen. And Bernie's rallying his base by promising Medicare for all, which he can't tell you how he's going to pay for. And he knows that that's not going to happen. So they're both con men, and Bernie should be ashamed of himself.
Joe Biden has had difficulty in this campaign season finding his footing. But on Saturday night, he gave what many considered to be the speech of his life. It was a victory speech that sounded really more like a victory speech in the general election, but which also set the tone for the kind of campaign that he apparently wants to run and for the themes he wants to focus on.
This is the moment to choose the path forward for our party. This is the moment, and it's arrived. Maybe sooner than anyone guessed it would, but it's here. And the decisions Democrats make all across America in the next few days will determine what this party stands for, what we believe, and what we'll get done.
Of course, those were all veiled references to the fears that many mainline Democrats have about a Bernie Sanders campaign against Donald Trump. And it was a tug at the center of the Democratic Party. Will they respond going forward? How do you think Democrats across the country, beyond Super Tuesday, will respond now that Pete's out of the race, Tom Steyer's out of the race, and others are inevitably going to drop out?
Well, I think all you have to do is look at the results in South Carolina, not the African-American results, but the results in suburban white precincts around the state, where we had a huge turnout, much larger than we expected, down in Charleston, Greenville, here in Columbia, of white suburban Folly Beach in Charleston, which is a 90% white precinct down there that are not particularly liberal. These are folks, I think what we saw come out were folks that are tend to vote Republican, probably even voted for Trump, that are so disillusioned with him, they're looking for a Democrat they can vote for in November, and that's Joe Biden. I think you're going to see that replicated now that Joe has shown he can win. I think you're going to see that replicated in a number of places around the country, like North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, and even in the Deep South. Maybe Texas. I don't know.
I know that I have to let you go because you have something else to go to, but how optimistic are you, given Joe Biden's performance in the debates and his difficulty in answering questions, and it seemed like he was very low-key, almost tired of running for office until South Carolina pumped wind into his sails. How optimistic are you that a Joe Biden can go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump on a debate stage?
Well, I'm 100% confident he can do that. And let me say this about, I went to Iowa and knocked on doors. Strange place, caucus. New Hampshire, I've done that before. Again, not really typical of America. And not folks that Joe Biden could warm up to, did better in Nevada, and came here and for the first time had a cross-section of America to talk to. That's important. Number two, Jim Clyburn pulled him aside, and I talked to Clyburn the other night at the rally, and he said this publicly, that Joe has to get more aggressive. I mean, Joe's default position is nice, unlike me. And I think that what Clyburn said to him shaped some of those comments. I would have been a little more pointed. And I think he'll get more. He was very aggressive in the debate in South Carolina and calling right. Bernie out on the gun boats. I think he's going to do more of that. And once it gets down to a two-person race, I think he'll be real, real aggressive about that, both on paid media and in person. So I'm very optimistic. I think that you're going to see results tomorrow night that will surprise many people. And secondly, I think that Bernie can't go the distance. I think that he's, I know he's got plenty of money. He's been building an online network for 10 years. So he's going to have that money continue to come in. But I think Joe Biden's beginning to get the kind of money he needs to compete. And by the way, he competed very well in South Carolina.
South Carolina Democratic State Senator Dick Harpootlian, who is a mover and shaker in Palmetto State politics. Would it be accurate to say, Dick Harpootlian, that you are a Biden surrogate for the purposes of this discussion?
Well, I'm not with the campaign. Let me give you this disclaimer. They would, if you watched the circus last night with John Heilman, you know nobody would sign off on that. They don't give me talking points. I'm a good friend of Joe Biden's for 30 years. I've been aggressive about helping him in a number of different ways, both financially and even knocking on doors in Iowa and here. But I am not approved nor sanctioned or recognized by the Biden campaign. And I'm sure the Biden folks hearing this will be very glad that I put that disclaimer on it.
Okay. Dick Harpootlian, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it this morning.
You take care. Sure. Bye-bye.
You too. We'll come back with more on the South Carolina primary and what happens next in a moment at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about what message South Carolina sent to Democrats and the impact that primary may have on those that will follow, including tomorrow's Super Tuesday primaries. Jim Morrill is the longtime political reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mike. Nice to be here.
He's in our Spirit Square studio along with columnist for Roll Call and contributor to WCCB-TV, Mary C. Curtis. Good morning to you.
Good morning, and I will try to be as frank as your previous guest.
And with us by phone is Gibbs Knotts, professor of political science at the College of Charleston and co-author of First in the South, Why South Carolina's Presidential Primary Matters. Welcome back, Gibbs.
Hey, glad to be here.
And let me start with you. Joe Biden was right about South Carolina being his firewall, but did he outperform, do you think, even his own expectations?
Oh, without question. You know, there was polling that he was going to likely be a victory, but I think he far exceeded expectations. And again, you know, it's sort of kind of explains, you know, why we wrote the book. And one of the key arguments in the book is that, you know, South Carolina is a very different test than Iowa and New Hampshire. And, you know, it's important that it's one of the early states for Democrats, given that Iowa and New Hampshire have their place as early states. So, you know, just a very, very different electorate when, you know, 55-60% of voters are African American. Talking about states like Iowa and New Hampshire, where over 90% of voters are white. So it's important for Democratic candidates to come down here and do well, and really Biden did better than expected.
Some were speculating that his firewall might not materialize. Was there ever any doubt about South Carolina within South Carolina for Joe Biden?
Yeah, from my perspective, there was. I mean, you know, Tom Steyer spent a lot of money, started to work with a lot of different influential political figures in South Carolina. You could not go to your mailbox or open a YouTube video without seeing Tom Steyer's face. So, you know, for a while there, and it looked like it was working for a while, but in the end, I think people kind of came home to Joe Biden. He had a level of familiarity. I mean, Tom Steyer had been trying to win the South Carolina primary for a year. Joe Biden had been trying to win the South Carolina primary for 30-plus years, and so he just had a lot of relationships and, again, support from the African-American community. But I thought Senator Harpootlian's point was a good one, that it wasn't just African-Americans. Obviously, that was the key in many ways, but it was also, you know, suburban people, you know, people living in Mount Pleasant, who, and he mentioned Folly Beach as well, who, you know, gave Joe Biden, because Joe Biden won really across, I don't know that there was a single county that Joe Biden didn't win, and so it's not, you know, it was a diverse coalition that Joe Biden was able to put together in South Carolina.
What role might Republicans have played in South Carolina? It's an open primary.
Yeah.
Republicans
can vote.
It's an
open primary, so anyone who was registered, we don't register by party, so anyone who was registered to vote could come out, and there was a lot of talk of, and even President Trump, you know, was urging Republicans to go and vote for the weakest candidate to give him an advantage in the general election. There's not a lot of evidence that took place. I mean, there was the suggestion that Bernie Sanders was the weakest candidate, and while Sanders was second, I didn't see any real surge for Bernie Sanders. I do think people, Republicans and independents, did play a role, but they came in and voted for Biden in large measure because they probably reasoned that he was the most moderate, and it doesn't mean they would necessarily select Biden if Biden was head-to-head with Trump, but, yeah. I mean, you know, the logic could have been something like, okay, well, if Trump is to lose, I'd rather have Biden in there than Bernie Sanders, and so I think Republicans did play a role. If we'd have had a Republican primary, you know, it's likely they would have voted in the Republican primary. Because we didn't have a Republican primary, it gave any South Carolina voter the opportunity to participate on Saturday, and many did. It was record or near record turnout. They're kind of still trying to figure out if it broke the 2008 turnout record, but it's certainly really close and far exceeded what the number of Democrats that turned out in 2016 when it was Sanders versus Clinton, and really looks like it may be a new record or right there on what happened in 2008, where it was Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards, the leading candidates.
So tomorrow is Super Tuesday, 14 states and American Samoa, and I think people who don't live within the continental United States get a chance to vote in that primary. After weak showings in three states, Joe Biden suddenly surges in South Carolina. Does he have enough time? Have people early voted and maybe didn't vote for Joe because they didn't think he could win? Well, now it looks like he might win. Does he have enough time to catch up in these Super Tuesday states, including North Carolina, Jim?
I think he does, actually. I think South Carolina certainly helped him in North Carolina. I think a lot of people in North Carolina, a lot of Democrats who are looking for somebody in the moderate lane, were considering Biden, and wanted to consider Biden, but felt that based on his performance in the debates in the other states, that he wasn't going to be a very strong candidate. I talked to Senator Dan Blue, the Senate Minority Leader, who said that. And Senator Blue came out and endorsed Mike Bloomberg because he thought Biden was too weak or would be a weak candidate. So now that Biden has performed the way he did in South Carolina, I think people will come back to him tomorrow.
African Americans picked up Joe Biden and carried him across the finish line in South Carolina, but Bernie Sanders allegedly has also built a multiracial coalition that his campaign believes will be helpful in a general election against Donald Trump. Is that coalition big enough? Is it strong enough to defeat a resurgent Biden campaign, do you think, Mary?
Well, you did see somewhat of a generational divide, even among African Americans, which some of the younger voters looking to other candidates, particularly a Bernie Sanders. But at the same time, I don't think you could underestimate, usually endorsements don't matter that much, but Congressman James Clyburn, when he came out for him so much, I think it really did have an impact on the vote among African Americans across the board, and also all voters, because he is so well respected. I believe a survey said almost half of the folks coming out of an exit poll said that his endorsement did mean something. And so you see him picking up, as Jim was saying, some more endorsements going into Virginia, someone like former Governor Terry McAuliffe, Senator Tim Kaine. You see going into California, although Bernie Sanders has a big lead because of the youth vote, because of his strength among Latinos. But you see folks like former Senator Barbara Boxer and the mayor of Los Angeles, Garcetti, coming out for Joe Biden. I do believe that while Bernie Sanders does have this appeal for folks who want this a change, and that young African-American voters, and particularly a lot of Latino voters, are listening to that message, Joe Biden still has the ear and the support of a lot of people who count. And let's face it, the older voters do go out and vote. Right now, young voters, yeah, they're for him, but are they going to come out? And the people who are loyal to Joe Biden, also you often hear Barack Obama trusted him. And for a lot of voters, a lot of minority voters, the fact that Joe Biden was supportive of the first black president, someone who was young enough to be his son, that is a loyalty that will be difficult to shake.
So we have the African-American vote pretty much solidified by Joe Biden. But I'm told, I read this morning, Gibbs, that the Latino vote seems to be more attracted to Bernie Sanders, and they are the larger minority if they turn out to vote, and they
That's
may
right.
not. So what impact will that tug and pull between Latinos and African Americans have on this?
That's going to be the real X factor, and you're exactly right. I mean, with Nevada, Bernie Sanders did very well with Latino voters. It was a caucus, and so that's in a situation where organization and being on the ground, which Bernie Sanders really and his team really excels at, plays a big role. But obviously, you know, we're going to know the answer to that tomorrow night when Texas and California, two states with large minority populations, large Latino populations, are going to vote. And so we're going to know how well Bernie Sanders holds that together and whether we see Joe Biden. Yeah, I would say something a little bit about Sanders. You know, Sanders in South Carolina at least had about 17 support. He won about 17 percentage points of the African American vote. And that's not really much of a change from what happened in 2016. And so I sort of feel like, look, you know, if it is a two-person race and Sanders is the person who is, I think, already got his ticket punched as one of the final two, given how well he's performed, and he's not winning a lot of the African American vote, it's almost like you have to think the other person is Joe Biden. I don't see, certainly Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, Pete Buttigieg, who's obviously dropped out now, have not shown an ability to win from non-white voters, and that just makes it Joe Biden almost by default. Bloomberg is a wild card out there. Obviously, if he does well, that changes things a little bit. But, you know, we saw kind of almost a small example where a little case study where Tom Steyer spent a bunch of money, a billionaire in South Carolina, and it didn't necessarily translate. You know, I suspect that Bloomberg could potentially, he's a lot more sophisticated in his operation, but could have some of the same results.
I'm going to ask the big question, because we've had a lot of candidates drop out from the initial field, which was enormous this year. And over the weekend, on Friday, Tom Steyer was scheduled to be the first guest on this program. Now, you think, one thinks, given that Super Tuesday is tomorrow and Pete Buttigieg dropped out last night, that he knew he did not have a path. Tom Steyer booked himself on the show before the South Carolina primary after spending $17 million in South Carolina. He must have known he didn't have a path. Why would he want to come on the program? So who should drop out next? I want to hear from all three of you. Mary.
Well, I am not working for any of these campaigns, and I am not a fortune teller. We can see, though, looking at the polls going ahead, that Amy Klobuchar is really in single digits in a lot of these states. Now, her state, Minnesota, is a Super Tuesday state, as is Elizabeth Warren's in Massachusetts. And polls are showing that Bernie Sanders is giving both of them a run for their money in those states. And you would the threshold for getting any delegates is 15%. So it's possible that some of these folks who are under that threshold will come out of it without any delegates. And they'll have to look at their money after
that. You didn't answer the question. Who should drop out?
I didn't say. I don't give them any.
All right.
They should stay in as long as they want to stay in. But the key, the words that folks have been saying is organization. When the guest said that, you know, Bernie Sanders has been so well organized in Texas and California. And the thing is, Joe Biden has done well, but he hasn't had the money to be on the ground with organizations in some of those states. So that'll be interesting.
So Gibbs, who should drop out next?
Yeah, I mean, I think Klobuchar should drop out and Warren should consider dropping out. I think one thing maybe that's on their mind right now, since they both have their home states holding contests on Super Tuesday, you know, they might be able to go in and at least, you know, face the voters then. But, you know, I don't see... Again, I'm coming back to support from non-white voters. If they are not able to win support from non-white voters, and Sanders isn't able to win support from non-white voters, then, I mean, the only person who's demonstrated an ability to do that is Joe Biden, especially African-American voters, let's say. So I suspect that Warren and Klobuchar will have a lot of pressure. And then Bloomberg, since he's not faced any voters yet, I think that we have to see kind of what happens and if his message resonates with people. I mean, I've talked to folks who, you know, are well connected in the Democratic Party, and they feel like the operation that Bloomberg has put together and the analytics that his team is using are the best. And so, you know, we'll see if that ends up kind of overcoming this momentum and great coverage that Joe Biden's getting coming out of South Carolina.
You've had a lot of time to think about my question now, Jim. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think anybody should drop out, but I would echo what the other guest said, that, you know, tomorrow Amy Klobuchar has a primary in her home state of Minnesota, Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, and polls in Massachusetts have shown her either tied or losing a little bit to Bernie Sanders in Massachusetts. So if they lose their home states, and I don't see how they have the resources to go on or get the or have the meet the 15% threshold that you need to get delegates. I think Michael Bloomberg is a wild card in this whole thing.
Is he on the ballot in all 14 Super Tuesday states, Michael Bloomberg?
Yeah, I believe he is.
So, yes.
He wasn't in the first four. Probably.
Yeah, I heard him in North Carolina here Saturday night. He and Amy Klobuchar spoke to a Democratic gathering, and he didn't really talk to folks before or after, but he was making his case.
So let me talk to the nonpartisan political scientists. Not that any of you are partisan, but let me talk
to
the political scientists about this question that Mary brought this up. She said that she thinks these candidates should stay in the race as long as they want to.
Well, I can't, you know.
All right, well, let me ask.
Whatever.
Let me ask
Come
Gibbs.
On.
Let me ask
No
Gibbs.
Advice.
Let me ask Gibbs. The problem here is, it seems to me, that you want to get out at a time like Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg got out because he didn't see a path forward. And he also knew the time had come to throw his supporters to someone else in the race who can beat the president in his reelection efforts. Should that be the consideration? How do you know when the time is right? And should that be the consideration for these other candidates?
It's a great. There's no manual that says, "Hey, here's what you get out of the presidential race." So, but you know, I think that you know, Buttigieg, you know, deserves a lot of credit for sort of seeing that there wasn't a path forward. He hasn't endorsed anybody to the best of my knowledge, but I'm really looking to see in the next 24 hours or so whether he does endorse anyone. But I think Democrats can learn a lesson from what happened in 2016 for Republicans. And so you had this candidate like Donald Trump who had extremely loyal support but was getting, you know, in the high 20s, 30% in a lot of these states, and there wasn't really an organized person to go against Trump. And by the time it was down to Trump and Ted Cruz, it was really too late. And so I suspect Democrats are, you know, again, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump are complete opposites in terms of most political issues, but the similarity is that Bernie Sanders has a loyal group of supporters. He is probably not going to drop much below 20, but probably maybe with certainly with this many candidates not go much above, you know, 35 or 40. The question is if there's one alternative, can Sanders end up getting the majority of people? But if he keeps getting 40% and there's, you know, it's Biden and Bloomberg or Biden and Klobuchar, then that can make it, you know, make Bernie be not the majority delegate leader when we get to the convention, but certainly the plurality leader, and it becomes a really hard case to have to go in and say, okay, well, you know, we're going to go to a second ballot, and it could be really so I do think times are different. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of Democrats that are motivated to try to get Donald Trump out of the White House, and so I think we could see some different calculations than we normally see.
Okay, so while Biden and all the other Democrats were focused on South Carolina, Mike Bloomberg, as Mary just alluded to, was here in Charlotte because tomorrow will be the first test of voter support for him.
If we're going to beat Donald Trump in November, then we need to take him on in swing states like North Carolina. And we can't wait until the primary is over to start campaigning here. Our work starts now.
So what have either of the two of you who live here, Jim and Mary, what have you heard about Bloomberg's support among voters?
You know, I mean, he's essentially tied for third or in the top three, certainly in a lot of the recent polls. So he's certainly out there. Nobody spent more. He spent $15 million in North Carolina just on advertising. And he's got a staff of 125 people and offices across the state. So he's really made an investment.
Mary, 30 seconds.
Yeah, he has hired a lot of people. He has a lot of high-powered endorsements, including our mayor. But the wild card is our mayor's daughter has come out and said, you know, she's disappointed in that. So does he have the support of young people who might be, and others, who are put off by the fact that a billionaire is dropping into the race right now?
More to talk about as we head toward tomorrow and look at what happened over the weekend in South Carolina with our three expert political people, Jim Morrill, Mary C. Curtis, and Gib Knotts. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Jim Morrill is here from the Charlotte Observer, longtime political reporter, Mary C. Curtis, columnist, contributor to Roll Call and WCCB-TV, and Gibbs Knotts, professor of political science at the College of Charleston, and the author of First in the South, Why South Carolina's Presidential Primary Matters. Joe Biden, who had been kind of sleepy and struggling, woke up when he got to South Carolina. Most pundits said he did well in the Charleston debate. He was certainly more aggressive. He received Jim Clyburn's endorsement and 60% of the votes of South Carolinians. And even before the votes had been counted in South Carolina, while voting was still underway, in fact, Joe Biden came to Raleigh, where he projected nothing but confidence.
Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. I'm ready to play. The full comeback starts in South Carolina and gets... and then goes here on Tuesday. I mean it. We're going to win South Carolina. And the next step is North Carolina. North Carolina. With your help, we're going to win here as well. And then it's a straight path to the nomination for President of the United States of America.
So, Gibbs, what happened in South Carolina that gave Biden front-runner attitude even before the results were known?
You know, I think familiarity and comfort. This is a state that he's been to many, many times, and it's an electorate he really understands. I totally agree with you. He did well in the debate. There was a CNN town hall where he was really, really effective. And then just, I cannot say enough about the Jim Clyburn endorsement. That was huge. There is, you know, Jim Clyburn is the most influential political figure in the state of South Carolina. And to get him to endorse you in such a dramatic fashion really, really helped propel Biden. I think really helped, you know, we saw Biden was starting, you know, having a consistent lead in the polls, and the lead was starting to grow, but no one polled the final victory total that Biden was able to have. And I think that had a lot to do with Jim Clyburn.
Jim.
You know, I think that there's no doubt, as I mentioned before, that South Carolina will help Joe Biden in North Carolina. I think it proved to people that he was still a strong candidate, a viable candidate for that moderate lane. But don't forget that almost 800,000 people have voted early in North Carolina.
Right.
And so a lot of those people voted, including for Pete Buttigieg and Tom Steyer, and a lot of other candidates who are no longer in the race. In fact, tomorrow's ballot's going to have the names of 15 presidential candidates, and about nine of them at least have dropped out. But they'll all get votes, which will make it harder for some of the rest to get to the 15%.
And what happens to the delegates that Pete Buttigieg has at this point? Where do they go? Do they have to vote for him on the first ballot at the convention? Is that how it works?
Not sure. They're in limbo, right?
I think that they might do that, but then they'll be free agents.
So, and I really think, too, people who are saying South Carolina, North Carolina, they're very different in a way. So
yes.
If they want to put them together. The poll said that people for whom faith and religion were very important in South Carolina really went for Joe Biden, and that was a big deal. And that's a little bit different in North Carolina. And then also, as Jim said, Biden and Sanders and Bloomberg are running really close. And who knows the wild card? We see the coronavirus, and Bloomberg has used that to say, I am a manager, and this would be a strong point for me. So we never know these sort of wild cards. He came out and played that card last night when he had his little State of the Nation speech about what he would do.
The three-minute commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking like in his own little Oval Office. So we have all of these other things that are happening as we speak that'll have an effect on it. So there are the unknowns as well as the knowns, and but Bloomberg, you know, as we have said, we also saw him go down to Selma with other candidates for the 55th commemoration of Bloody Sunday, and he did not get quite a friendly reception on that.
For people who don't know, Michael Bloomberg bought 3 minutes of airtime for a commercial, a single commercial on NBC
yes.
and CBS last night. Philip on Twitter says, recommending which Democrats should drop out next are neglecting the calculus of a contested convention. Second round alignment may well be a factor for the first time in modern elections. Given what happened in South Carolina, and maybe the patina of a winner can hold for Joe Biden going forward beyond Super Tuesday, but if it doesn't, if he has a slog, will there be a contested convention, Gibbs?
I think it's the best chance we've seen probably in a generation. And for political junkies, we're real excited because it used to be that the convention party leaders and delegates would go and really fight it out and have a discussion, and there'd be some brokering. But, you know, that also has the potential to, you know, really, really upset some people and kind of give the appearance of being undemocratic. And so I think it's a decent chance, probably, you know, somewhere 50-50, but I don't know for sure. It's just hard to see. It depends on how long these other candidates stay in the race and whether, you know, Joe Biden really is really back, has really kind of recovered in his campaign and woken up, or if this was just South Carolina was just a blip,
yeah.
And then we continue to see kind of some of the missteps that he had earlier.
Go ahead.
Democratic Party leaders really fear that, because if that happens, if Sanders goes in with a plurality but not a majority, and something different happens on the second ballot, wow, there would be some chaos.
75% of the March primary states delegates will come from communities in which 30% of the voters are from communities of color. Who poses the biggest threat, do you think, Jim, to Biden's ability to woo them, Bernie or Bloomberg?
Well, that's a good question. You know, polls in North Carolina, I'm not familiar with that many polls across the country, but polls in North Carolina have shown Bloomberg getting a sizable percentage of the African-American vote. Second,
despite stop and frisk.
Despite that, I think people are looking for people are looking for somebody who can win in November, and in many ways, at least up until now, Bloomberg has seemed like he had the resources to do that.
Yes, some basically black voters, they're not a monolith, so they're very different, but very pragmatic. And it's been said, too, that they feel the most at stake in a Trump presidency. So they have the most to lose, so they're looking to folks. But I think there, too, you will have a lot of an age breakdown. Because a lot of younger voters I've talked with, that is basically a non-starter because they've been profiled, something has happened to them, and they listen to that audio of Bloomberg saying, just Xerox a copy, young black male criminal, throw him against the wall and frisk him. And while he apologized for saying it went too far, I think he misses the point, as Elizabeth Warren brought up in the debate, that it's the policy itself.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Amanda, and a judge who...
Yes,
a judge actually stopped it.
Yes.
He did not stop it.
Yeah, and he ridiculed that ruling. So.
Amanda Loveday, director of the South Carolina Democratic Party, has said that, quote, a vote for anyone else tomorrow is a vote for Bernie because no one else has the trajectory to be the nominee. It will be Joe Biden or it will be Bernie Sanders. You agree with that, Gibbs?
I do agree with that. I mean, I think with a small caveat that we just haven't seen Bloomberg sort of how well he's going to do when votes are cast. But, I totally agree that Warren, obviously Buttigieg now and Klobuchar, I don't see how they have a path to the nomination. I'm skeptical on Bloomberg, but I don't know for sure until some voters have had a chance to weigh in because, he runs a very unconventional campaign. It's unheard of to skip the first four states. It's like, the guy in Jeopardy who started answering all the high-dollar questions first. I mean, he kind of just blew things up. We don't know if it's going to work or not. But we're going to know on Tuesday night. If Bloomberg comes in fourth, third or fourth, and not really that impressive, doesn't really get the 15% in very many states, then we'll have our answer. But if he's a strong second, if he starts to beat Biden in some places, then I think he's somebody who still could have an option and really comes down between Biden, Bloomberg, and Sanders.
And he has the resources to stay in forever.
That's right. I mean, and that's a really important point, Mary, is because, a lot of these people, it comes down to, their donors, their money's drying up, they can't pay their staffers, they're having to face, do I put in some of my own money if they do have some money? But somebody like Bloomberg, I mean, again, he doesn't have to make that same calculation. But, from what I've seen and what I've heard people who know Bloomberg talk about, he still follows the data. And if he sees he's not, even though it's not that much money for him, he's not going to waste his money if he doesn't think he has a viable path. I think he'll turn over some of his analytics and resources to whoever he thinks is the sort of the best person. And I think that's likely to be Joe Biden, but don't know for sure. I mean, there's no indication that Bloomberg is going to put his support behind Bernie Sanders.
Joe Biden believes, Jim, that his rivals need to drop out if they cannot get support from black voters. Was that comment aimed at Klobuchar and at Buttigieg?
Well, I'm sure it was, and Bloomberg, too, indirectly, because even though he's untested yet and won't be tested until tomorrow, he's got to prove that he can get the votes. But I agree with what Gibbs said. Bloomberg is a wild card in this, but you can't underestimate spending $500 million on advertising across the country. I mean, money does have some effect, although, as we saw for Tom Steyer in South Carolina, it doesn't have a lot of effect all the time.
Yeah, and I'll say one thing, just to add to what Jim said, in our book, we went and looked at every single person who's run in the South Carolina primary and looked at how much money they spent and put it all in a fancy statistical model, and money was not a statistically significant predictor. And so it just, it doesn't mean you need money to run for office. What we're trying to say is that candidates who spent a lot more money didn't really do significantly better in the South Carolina primary. And obviously we did not have Tom Steyer in there because we didn't know what his total dollar figures, but that our findings would have predicted that. It's the type of state where it's not all about the money. Donald Trump didn't spend a lot of money in South Carolina and did really well. Jeb Bush spent a ton of money in South Carolina and kind of bombed.
Yeah. Voting is very emotional, too. People vote for all kinds of reasons. Is this person authentic? So
here's some emotion. Kirsten on Twitter. Bernie won big in Nevada, which is a swing state. South Carolina is not. Biden can't beat Trump. That's a Bernie supporter right there.
Yeah. And I'll comment on that, too. So basically, it's interesting. Biden is doing well in these red states, which don't typically, like South Carolina, no one's going to argue that's not a red state. whereas Bernie's doing better in bluer states. I subscribe to the opinion that you really need someone who can win swing states like North Carolina, like Virginia, although that may not be, like Florida. And I believe that, you know, getting suburbanites and people to give Democrats another look is the best chance Democrats have. And I think finding somebody a little more moderate, that's my view, kind of based on my opinion. But, yeah. You know, look, Donald Trump kind of blew things up with his the way he won, and it's possible that Bernie Sanders could thread the needle and win some Midwestern states. And
the big fear about Bernie Sanders among a lot of Democrats is the word socialist.
Right.
They fear Republicans will use that word, and they will, against him. But Bernie has an immense appeal among young people, Jim, who did not come of age during the Cold War, for whom communism and socialism have complete. They don't have. You and I are near the same age, and they don't have in their heads the vocabulary that those words used to be associated with. Are there enough young people who will turn out to vote for Bernie to overcome whatever attacks the right may make on his socialist bona fides?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, right? I mean, he had 1,400 people at a rally at Winston-Salem State University last week in North Carolina, and they were, excited about him. He had 13,000 people in the Boston Commons over the weekend. You know, he's got an appeal to these people, and whether they come out and vote, though, is like.
And it's not just the young, though. I was here, and he had 2,100 people at the Belk, and they were all ages. And people would point out, you know what? It's like Bernie says, we already have socialism for the rich, and even programs like Social Security,
yes.
Medicaid, Medicare. If you look at the ads at the time, you'll see like people like Ronald Reagan said, this will lead to government takeover of everything, and now you can't take Medicare away from people if you tried.
Republicans fought Donald Trump until it was inevitable that he was going to be the nominee, and then when he became the nominee and won the election, they all just got together in lockstep if they are the party of Trump. Could the same thing happen to Democrats if a Bernie Sanders or a temporary Democrat like Mike Bloomberg gets the nomination and or the actual win? Could Democrats win the contest and then lose what some people are accusing the Republicans of doing, losing the soul of the party? Could that happen?
I have a harder time seeing Democrats rally around Sanders that much.
Well, yeah, that's the old saying, Republicans fall in line, Democrats fall in love. And you'll see that they're all pledging that they will support him. But you see now some very harsh language coming out, particularly from these moderate Democrats that won the House by turning over swing districts that Trump had won. And they're really kind of, you know, skittering away from Sanders at the top of the ticket. But they say they'll come around him, and Barack Obama's staying out of it until the end, where he says he'll support the person.
Frida on Facebook, I believe Elizabeth Warren would make an excellent president, but I don't see how she can win the nomination. I respect Joe Biden, but I'm not sure he'd be a strong leader. So do I vote with my heart for Elizabeth Warren, or do I vote strategically for Joe, knowing he has the best chance to form a broad coalition? And I'm curious, given the fact that she says she's a capitalist, but her policies are very similar to Bernie Sanders, why she hasn't done better, Jim?
I'm surprised too, frankly, because she was leading the polls, 3 or 4 months ago. It looked like she would get the nomination. Sanders had a heart attack, and now you get the.
Yeah.
Now she is the one who's falling out, and he's ahead.
The other big fear.
Some will say gender, but.
The other big fear among Democrats about Bernie is what his impact will be on the down ballot races and their attempts to regain the Senate, to keep the House, and get some state legislatures and perhaps some. State houses, some governor's mansions as well. Now, what could make that happen here? What could prevent that from happening in North Carolina?
Well, I think a lot of North Carolina Democrats are worried about that because they're trying desperately to take control of at least one of the houses in the state general assembly, right, and keep the governor's race.
But whoever's on the ticket, though, whatever Democrat it is, they're going to paint it as being him or her as being radical.
Mary C. Curtis, columnist, contributor with Roll Call on WCCB-TV, Jim Morrow, political reporter for the Charlotte Observer, and down there at the College of Charleston in beautiful Charleston, Gibbs Knotts, author of First in the South, Why South Carolina's Presidential Primary Matters, and it certainly did to Joe Biden. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.